So there should be eight handouts from what I'm looking at. Starting with status and trends, wetlands mapper, a picture of the United States. Should be double-sided, yeah. Then the next one should be the routine wetland determination form, which you already have that one, but I just copied it again because we'll be referring to it today. Then you have the ENG 4345 form, which is on the website, the whole, just an empty one, followed by drawings and explanation. That goes with the ENG form. You will not need to fill out this form, but I'll refer to it later. You will need to make one of the drawings that are required for the ENG 4345 form. An ENG form that I've filled out before for a Corps of Engineers permit, just to kind of give you an example. And then last one is a wetland map that kind of leads into, well, mapping, and we'll refer back to that during the lecture a week from today. Remember, the lecture a week from today is in 276 over in Ag Engineering. Next Tuesday, though, Dr. Roberts will be here to talk about hydro geomorphic classification. All right. So today, is getting into talking about mapping wetlands. We're going to start off first in just talking generally about mapping wetlands and wetland mapping endeavors in the United States, current databases that exist out there to help you in mapping wetlands, and then talk about more specifically how you will go through, how you'll set up a sampling design and go through mapping your wetlands for your wetland mapping assignment. So, all the lectures are very pertinent. This one is worth, and the one next Thursday is probably worth a good 30% of your grade, the wetland mapping assignment. So, you want to really ask questions, y'all. When we get into the stuff, we really start, talking about mapping the wetlands and how you set up design, etc., to sample. Please ask questions, because after today and next Thursday, you'll be off on your own to go do this yourself. Okay, so hopefully we'll have a couple different examples here, and I've lectured on this before, I lecture primarily on the board, and I figured that isn't really possible with two students in West Tennessee, so I made some more slides to help illustrate it, although I'll probably go with the board because, as you know how it is, as you're writing things, including y'all are writing things and writing things down, making maps, it helps formulate the concepts in your mind. And if you're just looking at a slide, it's not as effective. So we'll probably use a combination of those things. So I encourage you all, when we get to that, to kind of sketch out things, etc. All right, so wetland mapping. Okay, and overall, in the United States, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, through the National Wetlands Inventory, keeps track of mapping, of mapping wetlands and the status of wetlands, how the acreage of wetlands we have out there, wetland losses, etc. That's through the National Wetlands Inventory website down in the bottom right corner, www.nwi.fishandwildlifeservice.gov. Okay. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has the primary responsibility for keeping track of the amount of wetlands that we have in the United States. Okay? Now, the first time that Fish and Wildlife Service did a wetland inventory was in 1956. Shaw and for Dean in 1956, mapped wetlands throughout the central United States, and with the primary interest of looking at wetland loss and wetland conditions related to declining waterfowl numbers. So as we go through and we talk a lot about wetlands, you'll see that it's really been the waterfowl world that has driven much of the wetland conservation, although now we look at a variety of species that use wetlands and understand multiple benefits of wetlands, not just for one particular group. But historically, that has the waterfowl group has led management and conservation endeavors, and still do, such as Ducks Unlimited, for example, is a major wetland conservation organization. Okay, now, that was the first inventory, but it wasn't until later on in 1974 when the National Wetlands Inventory, that group of Fish and Wildlife Service, was actually created. And at that point, their goal was to produce maps of wetlands in priority areas. And still in the mid-1970s, that was pretty much focused on waterfowl breeding and wintering areas, migrating and wintering areas. And some of those areas were coastal areas, the Mississippi Alluvial Valley, Prairie Pothole region of the central United States, the playas of the southern Great Plains that extend from southwest Nebraska down into northwest Texas, the Central Valley of California, all major wintering areas, breeding and wintering areas for waterfowl. Now, in 1986, the Emergency Wetlands Protection Act was formed. And this is right around the time also that waterfowl populations were really crashing. And they were at the lowest levels that they had been in the past 30 years. And because after the 50s, waterfowl numbers started to increase through the 70s, and then declined precipitously thereafter. And waterfowl wetland ecologists were concerned. This legislative act actually set a goal to figure out how many wetlands we had and nationwide. And well, and that's really been enacted within the lower 48. To our knowledge, we haven't lost very many wetlands in Alaska. But we haven't mapped many wetlands in Alaska, only about 20% of the area. Okay, so the goal of the Emergency Wetlands Act was, a Resources Act, was to map all the wetlands in the United States by 2001. Well, we're a little past 2001. How are we doing? Okay, we're almost there. We're 95% completed. And this map here shows, there's two sides to this map. One says source imagery era, digital and hard copy, wetland maps of the lower 48, okay? And you can see that the white color, well, the light colored portion is areas that are not mapped. And basically, as far as the database is concerned, let's see here. I think I put down New Mexico. That's Nevada. No, that's not Nevada. That's Utah. Excuse me. Utah, Wisconsin, and Montana, and parts of Idaho. And then you can see a few other spots in Texas and north, west Louisiana, south, west Arkansas haven't been mapped. All of Tennessee has been mapped. Okay. Now, what is the difference between this side and the other side? And we're going to get to the other side today. I hope some of you guys got that email and brought your laptops, because we're going to do an interactive computer exercise today with a database called Wetlands Mapper. That is a combined effort between U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and USGS. But the digital data set that exists out there through Wetlands Mapper is shown here. And I have that estimate somewhere. I think it's around 60% of our wetlands have been mapped within the United, well, are available digitally. And you can see in Tennessee, most of the wetlands, you know, east of Nashville have been mapped. There's quite a few actually. Well, they've all been mapped, but as far as availability, the western portion of Tennessee, where actually most of our wetlands are, the digital data doesn't exist yet as of March 6, 2007. Well, even now, because I was just checking on it. Okay. Let's see. So yeah, here's the other portion. Digitize all wetlands by September of 2004. A little behind on that too. Okay. And about 40% remain. Most of those areas for the digital portion are in the southwestern United States, as you can see from that big white portion on the back side of that handout. All right, the goal of Fish and Wildlife Service National Wetlands Inventory is ultimately to provide the citizens of the United States and territories with current geospatial data on all wetlands and deep water habitats. Okay, and you will see that when we do the exercise with Wetlands Mapper, is that there are deep water habitats listed as well, and it's available to anybody in the United States. At least the digital forms are. If for the hard copies. For the hard copies, you can request hard copies. If you go to the National Wetlands Inventory website, you can request hard copies of maps for your state. Well, excuse me, let me back up. You can look up who has your state representative, who has copies of those maps, who is the distributor of those maps. For Tennessee, it's TWRA. And you can contact their main office and you can I don't believe they're free. I think there is a small fee for them, but you can purchase hard copies if you want. And again, our entire state has been mapped. All right. Any questions with that?
Isn't a book like the hard copies, like the soil survey maps?
I don't know, John. So the question was, are those in a book? And I don't know. I don't know if you can buy them for the whole state. Or if it's by county.
The one like I've seen, I know in the Region 1 office there, they had a bunch of different sets of maps, like the media hardwood maps and uh-huh. for all the different things. And one of those was a wetland map, and it's a full state. It's probably 4 foot by 2 foot, or that
okay.
size is one full sheet.
Yeah. So the Jonathan was saying that in the TWRA office that you can. There's an entire state map that has them all mapped out. I'm guessing, though, and when we look at Wetlands Mapper, for details, actually listing the class and the subclass, and often the water regime modifier is also listed, you'd almost have to be by county, because when we do the Wetlands Mapper thing, you zoom in interactively, and you really have to zoom in on a small spot to see what the heck you're looking at. So I'm guessing they're probably available both ways, and probably what's hanging up in TWRA's office is kind of just an overall thing for people to see. But functionally, I'm guessing you'd almost see them by county. And whether you can buy those independently or all in a book, I really don't know that. Maybe we can find that out. Okay. Yeah, that's something. That's a good task for you, TA. Get on that.
Screw up the handouts.
Everybody get the handouts? Yeah. Okay. Everything's fine. It's all good. All right. So, now, y'all have, after this test, y'all have a lecture on wetland losses in the United States and causes of losses. I'm not going to deliver that in class because I've already given that lecture in the undergrad class, and we're going to move on to some other things like wetland biogeochemistry and things like that that are kind of important for wetland function. However, this will be a topic that I'll cover a little bit today, just because it's related directly to the National Wetlands Inventory, about the current state of wetlands in our country. And it'll be in a little more detail, well, in a lot more detail in that podcast, okay? And I think that's included in the second or third exam information. I can't remember which one, but that's down the road. Now, the state average, well, excuse me, the average, well, the total amount of wetlands that have been lost since European settlement is estimated around 53% in the lower 48. Again, Alaska hasn't, at least to our knowledge, has really, wetland loss has been minimal in Alaska. The other lecture goes through and talks about Canada and even wetland loss within Tennessee, which happens to be right around 60%, so we're above the national average here. Okay, this is an image actually from 19, this is from 1980, this 1980 survey. We have around 107 million acres of wetlands in the United States. That is still about the same now. Actually, I'll present some information here about the very last report from the National Wetlands Inventory, and it is actually up some from it's still 107, but I think it's 107,700,000, so it's up about 300,000 acres. Okay, and we'll talk about why that's occurring. But you can kind of see just in general from this image where the majority of wetlands have been lost within the lower 48, which, all right, where have the majority been lost? Shout it out. Yeah, what's that? The Mississippi drainage area. Yep. Going down through here, the lower Mississippi alluvial valley, going from Louisiana all the way up through Missouri, up into the upper MAV, and then and it is the whole drainage going up into Iowa and Illinois, etc. So this the Midwest region and down through the Mississippi alluvial valley, as well as some over in Florida, some over in California. Okay, now this is pretty concerning because actually a large percentage of our shorebirds and waterfowl and to a lesser extent shorebirds, but various other water birds breed in this region, okay? And then they migrate down also through this region if they breed farther north. And they winter in this area or migrate through this area and maybe even keep going farther south if they're long distance migrants. So. Those are wetland-dependent species, and the loss of those wetlands certainly can have only negative impacts. Let's see here. So, as far as percent loss, if we look at states that have lost most of their wetlands, okay, if they had 10 wetlands, do they have 9 left, or 8 left, or 2 left? Actually, Arkansas and California lead the percent loss, okay? Now, they don't have as many red dots, but they didn't have as many wetlands to lose compared to, for example, Illinois and Iowa, these glacial states that really were carved out by the glacier of small wetlands were formed. As far as total losses, though, the most total is Florida has the greatest amount, 3.6 million hectares, it's been estimated, been lost in Florida, followed by Louisiana at 3 million hectares. Illinois is up there, too, right around 3 million hectares as well. So, I guess that was it on that. All right. Oops. Okay. Well, what the heck. Yeah. Yes. So we've lost 60%, and I'm trying to remember that figure for my slide. golly, do you guys remember from spring semester? It's around, I think, golly. So the question was, how many hectares of wetlands have been lost in Tennessee? And that is covered in that wetland loss talk. Ah, good. Do you have the old school one from last semester? It's definitely in there then.
Tennessee, approximately 26.7 million acres. Tennessee wetlands. That's the total.
So 700,000 acres.
Yeah,
700,000 acres have been lost in Tennessee. And so I guess you'd have to convert that to hectares. All right. Any other questions? Pick out your state. How are your states fare if you're not from Tennessee? Nebraska? Oh, you guys are fine. You don't have any problems out there. That's right, there aren't a whole lot of wetlands out there.
It's like when they said a dot's 20,000 acres, I can't.
it's hard to fathom. Yeah, I know. Exactly, exactly. All right. Dan, where are you from?
Pennsylvania.
Okay, yeah, Michigan's been hit pretty good. Pennsylvania, a few. Yeah. All right, okay, so now how are we, or what's going on now? Well, let me back up. Okay, part of the National Wetland Inventory's responsibility is to provide reports on wetland loss every 10 years. Okay. The last report, the report just before the one that was just released, was from 1986 to 1997. And I'll present those results first. First of all, if you read that, there's a kind of a history of wetland loss in our country. And it's believed in the early 1900s that wetland loss was around 490,000 hectares per year, which equates to around a rate of around 1% loss per year. Okay, if you look at total acres of wetlands in the lower 48. Okay, the 50s and the 70s, that decreased, but still a high rate of loss, around 0.4% per year. In the 80s, it slowed down a little bit more. Now we have the Clean Water Act enacted and actually wetland laws starting to be enforced, which really it took until about 1987 for things to kind of get figured out, as we've talked about before, when the Corps finally released their delineation manual. Okay, so right here we should see a slow of wetland loss, and indeed that did happen. Through the 90s, still wetland loss occurring, okay, but at a much lower rate, 0.1% per year. And in 1992, I think it was 1992, former President Bush implemented a no net wetland loss policy, which was held through the Clinton administration and was restated by George W. in on Earth Day of 2004. Okay, and actually George W., despite the Supreme Court decisions that have happened, which have been, we've talked about, and have been detrimental to protection of wetlands at a federal level, George W. has pledged to restore 3 million acres of wetlands. I think I can't remember the duration, but he's pledged not only to have no net loss, but also to really support the restoration of wetlands and the creation of wetlands. Now, what does that mean, okay, losing around 23,000 hectares per year? Just to give you a kind of close to home comparison, Smoky Mountain National Park is around 200,000 hectares. So that would mean that around 11% of the park is lost every year in wetlands. Okay, now that's pretty serious when you put it all together. It is distributed across our landscape, so it's the impacts aren't as noticeable as chunk, you know, taking a, you know, 11% of the park away. But it, just to give you an idea, every 9 years, total wetland area equivalent to the park size would be lost. Now, that's at the rate that was occurring based on this last report by National Wetlands Inventory in 97. As part of President Bush's pledge during Earth Day of 2004, he immediately wanted the status of wetlands to be published. And so the National Wetlands Inventory stopped in 2004 with their surveying, and they had a couple more years because, again, it wasn't due out until, well, 97 was when they would stop, and then they would publish, and usually it's about 2 years later they publish. So they just published in 96, latter part of 96, they published an updated version. And the updated version has a little bit better news, but there's some things to think about and to critique and interpret cautiously. Okay, so this is the last one right here. It's status and trends here of wetlands in the conterminous United States from 98 to 2004. Again, every 10 years they're supposed to release a report, and this one was done in 6 years of monitoring instead of 10 years. Okay? So, all right. This is a required read, and this is the executive summary, so go ahead and read through that. It has a lot of good information in there, and we'll talk a little bit about that right now. Basically, what it summarizes is that currently we have around 43.6 million hectares of wetlands, which is equivalent to 107.7 million acres, which is, again, up around 300,000 from the last estimates. Our most common wetlands are freshwater wetlands, 95%, and actually this back page has a couple nice pie charts here. 95% freshwater. Of the freshwater wetlands, you can see most are forested wetlands at 51%. Emergent wetlands, so we're talking about emergent class wetlands, around 25%. Scrub wetlands, 17%, and then ponds at 6.5%. Estuarine wetlands emergent wetlands are the primary type at 73%, and then shrub wetlands, and then just flats and beaches. Okay. Yeah.
What are they kind of lakes at? Is that kind of the pond part?
No, lakes are underneath of deep water habitats.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they're not in the wetland estimates. That's correct. Now, that is an excellent point. So the question was about lakes and the deep water zones even of in like farm ponds. We're going to talk about that in just a second, because they are included, these small farm ponds, they are including the deep water zone in the wetland estimate. And so let's get to that here. When you read the first page or so of the executive summary, you're like, wow, conservation is really working here, and it certainly is part of the increase in wetlands, but we have to be aware of what types of wetlands are being increased. So there's about a net gain this year of around 77,000 hectares, which equates to a 0.2% gain. Okay, remember we were losing at a 0.1% loss with the last estimate that was given. Yeah.
If Is that mostly man-made? Or is...
Yeah, so is that mostly man-made? And it is. It is, yeah. So there's around 13,000 hectares annually being added. So what are the gains? Well, the gains are actually the wetland type that increase the most are freshwater pond acreages, okay? Increased 12.6%, around almost 300,000 hectares, okay, were added in freshwater pond acreage. It wasn't very much, but before represents a pretty significant increase. If you look at, again, this handout here, and you look at the last page, but just flip it over, there is a table here that summarizes the losses and the gains, okay, in wetlands as well as deep water. They do have deep water habitats separated out. And if we look at that far right column, it says change in percent. Well, we can just go down the list there. You have marine wetlands, which have actually been negatively impacted. So have estuarine intertidal vegetative wetlands. Those are emergent wetlands, okay? Emergent wetlands that are in the estuarine zone, negatively impacted. All intertidal wetlands have exhibited a loss of 0.5%. That's pretty high. Remember, we were all the way down to 0.1%, and within our marine systems, if we look at that, we're at 0.5%. I mean, that's five times the rate that we were observing, okay, nationwide in from the last estimate, okay? So that should be a red flag. Now, if we look at other losses, now where are the gains? Okay, we see a couple gains there with freshwater non-vegetated and freshwater ponds. Okay, now let's look at the footnotes there. For freshwater ponds, it includes categories that are palustrine aquatic bed and a palustrine unconsolidated bottom. And basically, it's the same thing for three, except it also includes unconsolidated shore. I'm not quite sure what is the difference between those. But what this is basically telling you, and what is summarized in the report, is these are man-made ponds. And probably in some regard, maybe impoundments, which have been created quite a bit by conservation organizations such as NRCS and Ducks Unlimited. Because they're not vegetated, they tend to give you information that they're a little more deep water than actually herbaceous emergent wetlands, okay? Because that's not in that category, assuming that they classified them correctly. All right, and there are some concerns with that we can talk about, because these estimates are done for using remote sensing, okay, and using different types of imagery. They do ground truth, and they ground truth about a third of the locations that they surveyed, okay, just to verify. And I think I'll wait to talk about that in just a second, because I have a few figures on that. But if we look at the rest of the freshwater wetland types, freshwater vegetated includes, that's palustrine emergent, palustrine forested, and palustrine shrub. That's down 0.5%. Freshwater emergent, 0.5%. Freshwater forested is up, which is a consequence of two things, at least from what they were able to determine. Yes, there have been hardwood bottom land restoration projects, and that is very common in the southeast, West Tennessee down through the MAV, of attempting to get bottomlands reforested. However, those the The majority of those restoration projects are still in infant stages. They're not at the forested stage yet. For example, in Tennessee, WRP really was instigated, and the first projects in the country started rolling in 1994. Our first project was in 1996. All right, so it's just 10 years old. Our oldest fragment in Tennessee is 10 years old. So it's that is getting close to meeting the forest criteria. But the increase in the primary factor probably driving that increase is, from what they determined, was shrub wetlands actually maturing into forest and not the creation of forested wetlands. Of course, if you work through that logic, right, well, we should have an increase potentially in shrubs, the shrub wetlands, because that's really where our restoration efforts are currently being classified as, and you don't see that. You see a major loss in shrub wetlands. And again, they is a disproportionate loss, actually. Okay, so yes, that decrease in that class of shrub wetlands is a consequence of some of those actually going through succession, but also some areas have been cleared, and there has been loss, logging, etc., to shrub wetlands as well as forested wetlands. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just missing something, but okay, in freshwater vegetated, the subscript says that includes the categories, and the last one is blustering shrub. Then what else is included in freshwater shrub?
Yeah, so it does include a blustering shrub. So what is in freshwater shrub? That's actually a pretty good question there, Nathan. That is, because that almost seems to be redundant, doesn't it? Yeah. I don't know.
It would make sense if it was a subcategory under freshwater.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not sure why that's listed that way. Because that's freshwater. Oh, you know what? It is a subcategory. It is a subcategory. So you have freshwater vegetated, and then you have emergent, forested, and shrub, and you can kind of see how it's indented just a little bit. Yep. Okay? All right. Okay, and so that's my bad. I kind of explained that. I wasn't looking at that either. Okay, so just to kind of clarify, freshwater non-vegetated, starting with the freshwater, includes it includes your ponds, which are basically aquatic bed and unconsolidated bottom, and includes palustrin unconsolidated shores. Now that's interesting though, because, I guess overall that category's increased 12%. Of that, I guess probably they break freshwater ponds out to really kind of emphasize that is the category within there that really is driving the change in percentage. Okay, and then when we look at freshwater vegetated, so we have emergent, forested, and shrub, you can see that basically we're losing shrub and we're losing emergent, but forested has increased as a consequence of succession and possibly some restoration efforts. All freshwater wetlands together, total, as far as total acreage, has increased 0.2%. But again, freshwater ponds are driving that. So there's a big difference between the conservation initially, if you just look at the numbers, it seems to be a great thing. But freshwater ponds are just one type of wetland. And in comparison to a vegetated freshwater emergent wetland, they're not nearly as diverse and productive as a pond that has a deep water system associated with it. And the other thing is that when they do those estimates, they count across. If you have a 1 acre pond, they're counting the entire thing as a palustrine wetland. And so that's really outside the palustrine zone if it's greater than 2 meters, but there's no way you can tell that difference when you're, you know, getting imagery and information from a satellite. So anyways, good points. Hopefully that's clear enough. And for those, I think y'all are probably maybe clear, but hopefully for the folks that are listening at home, they've got that clear. Okay, deep water habitats overall looks like have increased, more lakes at least. And okay, so really if we summarize our losses, we're talking estuarine wetlands and marine wetlands not doing good. Emergent wetlands not doing good. Shrub wetlands appear not to be doing good either. Okay, but an increase in freshwater ponds and a few of the other categories of deep water habitats. Is that clear? Good summary. Okay, and I think I have that all here in this slide. All right, so creation of freshwater ponds, forested wetland acreage has increased some. Losses, estuarine wetlands, freshwater, scrub, and emergent, freshwater emergent, all declining, okay? And again, a variety of explanations are given, were given. They did attribute 60% of the wetland loss to either urban or rural development, okay? And I assume that's outside of like agricultural categories. So development activities by humans. Coastal erosion is a big thing in Louisiana, and in talking in the podcast that you'll listen to about wetland losses, I discuss various hypotheses or mechanisms for those losses. And one of the main things is less sediment coming down the Mississippi River. It's less sediment, first of all, and second of all, the sediment is being shunted way out into the Gulf, and so that natural deltic sedimentation process isn't occurring at the rate that it used to be. And so the wetland loss in Louisiana is associated with emergent wetlands literally washing into the ocean. And then you have catastrophic events like Katrina that comes through and really scours out the wetlands that are already having issues. And then you have saltwater intrusion problems too. Okay, digressed. Any questions? All right, let's see here. Okay, here's one other caveat. Is that it's pretty impressive, actually. I started reading this, I was like, oh wow, that's interesting. They've really done a hell of a job here. Which, I mean, they have. You're always constrained by the amount of resources that you have. The study, this last report, was based on 4,682 randomly selected sample plots. Pretty good sample size, huh? 4,600. Each sample plot was 4 square miles. Pretty good size. All right. And let's see, these plots were examined, remotely sensed data in combination with field work to determine wetland change. Field verification was completed on 1,500 of those plots, so around 32%, as I mentioned, distributed in 35 states. And I guess it sounds like from here that primarily their focus was to determine the cause of wetland loss. Okay, now, if we just take that though, 4,682 plots times 4 square miles, and we multiply that out, let's see if I have that number someplace. Where do I have that number? That is approximately, seems like I wrote that down. Yeah, here it is. That is approximately 4 square miles times 4,600 is around, 18,000 18,800 square miles. Okay? So 18,800 square miles. That's how much was surveyed. Again, that's impressive. Let's see here. Except that we have around, in the lower 48, we have around 3.1 million square miles of land. All right. So if you do the math there, it basically means that 0.6% of our land mass was surveyed, okay, for this survey. And if you actually then multiply that by 0.35, okay, because, or 0.32, because 32% of the land mass was ground truth, or 32% of the surveys were ground truth. Then we're talking about 0.3, we're talking about literally close to just about 2% of our land mass was ground truth, with around 0.6 or so being being surveyed. So then that you kind of step back and you really kind of reflect on really do these trends. You all should be thinking this as young scientists, young thinking minds. Do the trends that are represented here really represent a true net increase? Or is it just a sampling artifact? Because they were randomly placed. And then that kind of, you begin to wonder and think about, you know, how real are these, are these numbers. The margin of error could certainly be within that, okay? I mean, if you went and you sampled the entire United States. So our entire United States pretty much has been mapped, but as far as keeping track of it, it isn't like they go and they check out every single wetland again. They just randomly sample and they look to see what was there before and what happened to that wetland if it changed, okay? And if there's a new wetland, what type is it? And so that does give us kind of an indication, okay? And maybe these trends are certainly true. I know there's a heck of a lot more farm ponds that are out there on the landscape than ever before. It's pretty wild. We need to determine how many farm ponds exist in Tennessee. That's been asking me several times, and I don't know, but it's thousands and thousands. There's no doubt. Okay, any questions there?
Urbanization was the main.
60% of the causes of the land, of the wetlands that where there was loss, was associated with basically rural or urban development. Yeah. Historically, it's been agriculture. Agriculture has been the number one cause. But that has been slowed considerably due to, as we talked about before, the swamp buster provision of the Farm Bill in 1985, and also NRCS conservation programs, which have actually encourage landowners to take wetlands out of production.
Also, the fallout of farming. I mean, most of the farming now is, you know, places where there's not that many wetlands. I mean, take for instance, Nebraska.
Yeah.
There's not that many wetlands compared to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at the landscape of farming out there compared to, Louisiana. It's got.
That's true.
Tons of wetlands.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Some of those areas used to have.
Yeah, a lot of those areas used to have wetlands. I mean, Iowa has lost, I think the figure is 98 to 90, that's like 98% of their wetlands. It's crazy. And Illinois is the same way. And so, yeah, a lot of those areas, before there were laws in place, those wetlands were drained.
Yeah, Iowa was 89% by year.
89%. Yeah, they have. They have, and the interesting thing is now with the whole biofuels initiative and many CRP contracts that are expiring, what's going to happen? CRP and WRP. So, you know, we may see a loss when basically when conservation programs can't pay as much as you're getting for corn to make ethanol, I mean, that's gonna potentially be a...
Unless they can develop switchgrass as being a better biofuel to work
with. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so this next thing, we're probably getting close to a break, aren't we?
6:03,
okay. Yeah, so let me talk about Wetlands Mapper, and then we'll take a little break, and we'll come back, and we'll do a little lab exercise here. Wetlands Mapper, and here is a handout, says Wetlands Mapper on it, is a joint effort between Fish and Wildlife Service and USGS. And let's see, they are in the process of upgrading. They've just upgraded as of July 2007. It's pretty cool, pretty interactive. You can actually now download things directly as a shapefile, an Esri shapefile, and bring them straight into ArcGIS. It's pretty neat, and I'll show you that. So let's see here. This is part of the whole digital imaging initiative where, like I said, there's 40% of the country that still is not part of this database. The analysis is the same as with national wetland inventory maps are based on soil maps and based on imagery maps. And it's basically the same data set. Okay, now when you are not ground truthing, okay, there's an inherent error that is expected in the classifications and especially in the classifications. It's easy to make errors and classify things as wetlands that are really deep water habitats. Also, accuracy from imagery is it's pretty coarse. The best you have is 10 meters, and actually much of this imagery is 30 meter grids, okay? And you can miss an entire wetland with 30 meter grids. And it's also still, when you see a wetland, it can be very blocky when you're using 30 meter grids, and it can overestimate in the same capacity. Okay, so ground truthing is necessary for accurate estimates of wetland classification and deep water acreage. To ensure the acreage, but also to ensure classification. And so that's, you know, why I'm taking you all through really learning how to delineate wetlands and map wetlands and getting out there and doing it, because that's how it's really done in the real world, and you get the best estimates. If you work for a wetland consultant or you're a biologist, if you map your wetlands, you're going to go out there and you're not going to use imagery, okay? Now, there's a link there, and we'll talk about that. You can use imagery and you can use Wetlands Mapper for some things, and you can use DOQQs, etc. for some things, but you really need to get out there and map them, get in the field to get a good, accurate map. Okay? And as I mentioned already, yeah, we already went through the 32% were actually ground truth of National Wetland Inventory. Wetlands were visited, so actually not that many. The point of National Wetland Inventory maps and of Wetlands Mapper is not to provide a source for any type of legal information, have any regulatory authority at all. It's basically to kind of keep track of our wetlands in the state, even with the misclassification, although the reality of it is that policy and millions and billions of dollars are based on these estimates. And if you know, the data that go into them are kind of haphazard, or there's errors that occur, then, you know, inappropriate, incorrect decisions could be made. We could think we're increasing wetland area when, in fact, we're decreasing. In fact, when I read that, the most recent report, and it said that wetlands had increased, it just blew me away because of all the negative wetland legislation. I couldn't imagine that it would have been positive, but again, with conservation programs and settlements and ponds and things, they're it's reasonable to understand there could be a positive increase. These maps are good for what are called vicinity maps, and that is U.S. Army Corps of Engineers term, vicinity map, and it is directly related to what is required when you fill out the EN 4345 form. So this handout here says application for Department of the Army permit. This is when you are getting permission to in a wetland. Okay. And you fill out, there's a bunch of information here that talks about your, you know, who you are, blah, 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 what you're going to do, the wetland, how much wetland loss is going to occur. But part of all of this, okay, is that you need to create some maps. One is called a vicinity map, which shows where the wetland is. And based from that, anybody should be able to pick that thing up and be able to drive anyone, okay? So the example of a vicinity map, and that is one of the criteria, one of the requirements for your wetland map assignment. In fact, it says right here, number one, vicinity specifications, U.S. Engineer Form 4345. So you will need to make a vicinity map. Well, what is included in a vicinity map? This handout here that says drawings actually goes along with and